Recording.
Ah. Thanks everyone for coming here, either on Zoom or at the library at LAM. So today's speaker is Patrice Tollet, who everyone knows. I'll let you introduce yourself and, if you want. And you can go ahead. Thank you for coming.
I don't think I need to introduce myself. Just to say about the presentation. So Carlo came in our office on Friday and with my arms, I refused quick class. No, I don't want to give a presentation. I don't like time, but here I am. So I recycled something I gave in Japan. That's actually a project I presented 3 years ago in a GECO Galaxy Evolution Circle. But because of the COVID, it has been delayed 2-3 years. And finally, we made the experiment and now it's ready. So, the talk today is about how we can form molecular hydrogen on carbon surface. So why is H2 molecular hydrogen important? Well, first, because it's the most abundant molecule and you derive the mass of the molecular gas from H2. And it's also, in the early universe, the only molecule. It's, of course, carbon-free. And if you think about the universe evolution, before you had the metals, well, the only atom and the only molecule you can have, it's hydrogen, a little bit of lithium. But if you are in the dark age, you only have atomic hydrogen or H2, Hg, H3+, H3+, but can emit light, especially if they have a dipole moment, like H3+. It's important because of the Schmidt-Cannikat law, where you relate the star formation rate, surface density, to the surface density of the gas, but not the atomic gas. So this is the atomic gas, but so this is H, sigma H and sigma H2, but the molecular gas. So the relation between the star formation rate is to the molecular gas. But what is interesting in this relation is the causality. How do you read it? You have molecular hydrogen because you have star formation, or you have a star formation because you have molecular hydrogen? In which is the cause and which is the consequence? So why H2 is important? Because it's an important cooler. When you really, basically, when you form a star, you take a ball of gas that you compress, but you need to release the extra energy and you need to cool by emitting some light. So this is a cooling function. How do you evacuate the energy as a function of temperature? Well, if it's too high a temperature, it's from the branch traveling. Then goes the atomic line. But if you want to go to low temperature, you have to go to molecular line. So molecular line, because we have a lot of line, are very efficient in releasing the energy. And then to form star. That's why you relate H2 to the star formation rate. So this is a cooling function of H2. And also because H2 can shield from the UV radiation. And if you shield the gas from the UV radiation, you can form other molecules which are even more efficient cooler. So this is. And then you can relate that to the Mado-Dickinson law of the star formation rate as a function of the redshift. And we know there is a peak, but the question is why you don't have more star formation rate here. Even if you have a lot of dark matter coagulation and all the biodynamic matter you want, all the density you want, why do you don't have star formation here? Would you have a break to form star? So why is H2 important? Because when you have a star formation region, well, you have this part which is emitting mostly in the UV visible, but you may have clump of gas with a molecular region and a transition region, which is called PDR, photon dominated region. So there is a slat here. This is your H2 region. this is the ionization front, the Hongren radius. And then you form molecular hydrogen, you shield the gas, and then you can form all the molecule, and this is a molecular region. So your photon-dominated region is a transition zone. If you can look at the scale, this is a logarithmic scale, so it's much, much thicker than the H2 region. And this molecular region is also thicker. And then you have the CO and everything. But if you translate this into emission of light in all the light emitted, if the light is emitted from the starburst region, so like this, but if it's crossing one of these regions, you can see the part of the line which is formed in the H2 region, which is formed in the PDR, which is formed in the molecular region. So the location of this line, the conversion of atomic hydrogen into molecular hydrogen, is very important, its position. And if you look at the intensity of infrared line, so the red line are produced in the starboard region. They are, if I cross this part, they are attenuated. So this is the green. And some of the line, they are typically produced in the PDR. So when you look in one line, part of the line is produced in the H2 region, part of the line is produced in the PDR. So this ratio is dependent on the volume, which is depending on this transition. Local universe or...
Can you remind us what PDR stands for?
Photon-dominated region or photodissociation region. The transition zone between the ionized hydrogen and the molecular gas. That's where most of the infrared line are emitted. So the big question is how H2 is formed in the interstellar medium. So you have several routes. So one route, which is very, very inefficient, is from H+. So this is important at about a redshift of 400. So when you have a recombination, you have a residual level of ionization, 10 to the minus 3, which is going down to 10 to the minus 4 at redshift of 100. So you have a little bit of ions, H plus ion, which can recombine with atomic hydrogen to form H2 plus, H2 plus with H, and you form H2. It's inefficient, but at high redshift, very high redshift, that's the only way you move. When the temperature is cooling, the radiation is more redshifted, it's less intense, and then you have another route which is opening. It's the H minus route. H plus one electron is giving H minus, which is very fragile. That's why you cannot have it at higher redshift. H minus react with H, giving H. So you can have a temperature dependence. More or less, you know the rate of this. This is very important. I can tell you if you're interested, but very important. You have minor route going from helium hydride, helium H+. The efficient rule is the route involving the grains, the solid phase. So you have H atom going on the surface of a grain. They move, they meet together, H atom plus H atom. They form H2 molecule, and then they are released in the gas. But you need a third body, which is the surface of the grain. But now you start to understand, if you do not have metal, you cannot have grain. So it's a little bit more complicated if you develop it into a different step. The first step, you need to stick one atom. So you have a gas phase atom sticking on the surface. So these are potential wall of the surface. So you have two ways to stick. One is physics option. You have a weak interaction between your atom and your surface. And then chemist option. You have a stronger, so you make a covalent bond, real chemical bonds. And then the potential well is deep. So from the gas phase, you stick on the solid phase. Second step is the diffusion. So you need to move from one place to another, step by step, to meet another. So you either you go through the potential barrier, or you go through tunneling, quantum tunneling, because wave functions are extending, overlapping, and then you, by quantum tunneling, you can move from one absorption site to another. What is important here is that the physics option site is much it's less deep, less strongly bound than the chemical site. And this is the Langmuir-Isherwood mechanism. So first, you actuate, you stick, you diffuse, they react. Possibly, you have an extra energy, exothermic reaction, and then it's released in the gas phase. So this is the most common mechanism. You have alternative mechanism, which is called irradial mechanism, where the atom is directly falling on one atom and reacting, either physics solved atom or chemical solved atom. So it's a little bit like boule pétanque. So when you point, and then the ball is going, okay. Or you can just shoot. It's release as HP. But you can trick a little bit, like in the boule. You can point, and then it's bouncing a little bit, and you reach the other way. Okay. But basically, how it works. So all of these mechanisms, they contribute to H2 formation. But for this, you need a surface of something. Something can be carbon, can be silicate, can be a mix of two. But basically, you can sketch recombination efficiency as a function of temperature. And it's exponentially decaying. Why? Because if it's too cold, they will stick, they will not move. If they don't move, they will not meet together. If it's too hot, they stick and come back to the gas phase. So they don't stick, they just bounce on the surface. So what is important here is that below, let's say 10, 12, the recombination is very poorly efficient. So you cannot form H2 on a surface, let's say below 10, 12 Kelvin. Then you have to think about if you put a redshift scale here, how you relate this to the redshift. Think about it. So now you can write down the equation. The question is, when is the surface mechanism taking over the H plus and H minus mechanism? So you write down the equation, formation on the dust. So it depends on the sticking coefficient, which is depending on the temperature of the gas, the temperature of the dust, on the efficiency of the chemical reaction, on the density, on the speed, okay. And then you have the formation of the gas. And to know when the surface formation is taking over, you look at the ratio, and when it's equal to one, it's matching. So it's depending on the temperature of the gas, temperature of the grain, reaction efficiency, and this, which is the density of the dust divided by the density of electrons, which is basically the metallicity. So now we come to the temperature of the dust as a function of the redshift. Remember this, the efficiency as a function of temperature. Now we can put a scale of redshift here. The temperature of the dust is increasing with the redshift. With some power law, you can have some uncertainties, but you have some power. But the floor temperature is a CMB temperature. And now, so we said between 10 and 12 Kelvin, you cannot have formation of H2. Okay. So web is a surface formation which is much more efficient, is taking over. It's depending on the metallicity, it's depending on the gas temperature. So in the red, you have the gas formation, and then you have the solid state formation. When do they cross? Depends on the temperature of the grain also, but basically they cross between redshift 3 and 5. So after this redshift, you can start forming H2 from the grain, then you can boost your star formation rate, and then you can boost the dust production, and then you can boost the formation of H2, and then you have an increase in. Okay. So your first bar arriving here, not the population 3, but after the population 3, you can start to form metal, you can start to form dust, and then you can start to form H2. But this really depends on the efficiency of H2 as a function of temperature. So we saw it was between 3 and 5. If you want to form star here, you should be able to form H2 at higher temperature. If you really want to form star here. So that's what we investigated. So I told you what I told you is true, but what I told you is on surface models, which are very flat. In reality, the grain are like this. So this is a picture of a real intestinal grain. It is very flat, it's very corrugated, it's very rigid. And that's exactly what you find. So in a tokamak, so this is a picture of tokamak. Do you know what is a tokamak? It's kind of torus where you have a plasma and you can try to make a nuclear fusion. So before, in the 2000 something, they had the good idea to put a wall of carbon because of the thermal properties. But then realized that because of the plasma stability, when you were sputtering some carbon, and then you were forming this kind of coliflow, very fractal surface. And then from this, you will form H2. But because it's a nuclear, you don't form H2, you form tritium, deuterium, radioactive. So your fusion apparatus turn out to be useless after 2 or 3 minutes of burning hydrogen. But after 2010, they put the gallium and tungsten, and now it's safe. But it's the same idea. You have a material which is real, not a flat surface. And when the material is real, you have holes, you have terrace, you have all what is called all the defects, islands, steps, and you have a lot of chemisorption. So remember the chemisorption, the potential is much deeper, then you can bound an atom much stronger. Much stronger means higher temperature. So to test this, I went to the north, to Sergi Pontoise, and run some experiments. So this is experiments. So this is a vacuum chamber here. So you have pumps, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have a surface, which is maintained at low temperature in the cryogenerator, let's say 10 Kelvin. Then you have a plasma, and you can introduce atom. And then, so you bombard with atoms like that. And then with the oven, we put a coronin. Coronin is a pH. And then you put coronin on the surface in a very disordered way, where you optimize the number of defects in the material. Then you use a plasma, you bombard your surface or carbon surface with the H. And then you detect in the mass spectrometer. Mass spectrometer detects the mass of the molecule. Detect H2. So you bombard with the H and you detect H2. It's a little bit more complicated than that because plasma doesn't dissociate at 100%. You have a lot of calibration to do with the plasma on, the plasma off, and on the background. So the experiment is not done on H2, but D2, because to avoid all the pollution from atmospheric H2. But anyway, if you do all the calibration, you can have the formation recombination. So you, we can do that at different temperature. So we have two different ways to do. One is isothermal, you sit on one temperature and you measure the recombination efficiency, or you scan the temperature and it doesn't match. They agree. So you have the recombination efficiency as a function of temperature. And now you can see that, okay, at 10 Kelvin, it's less, but it's not zero. And then you can go, you have your roll bars, of course, but more or less you can go to room temperature. So this means that you can form molecular hydrogen even at warm, high temperature, room temperature. So as a conclusion, molecular hydrogen can be formed on carbon surface, carbon or silicon surface, but we did on carbon surface, if you have defects, if the surface is linear. So this has implication on the formation of H2 and then on the star formation rate. How you can form H2 or not form H2 at IVG. And in the local universe, even on the structure of the PDR, because if you can move this to high temperature, you can change the size of the PDR. The abundances of the species, and then the light emission. So I have nothing more.
Thank you. So does anyone have any questions now?
I went fast in the technical details.
Okay. I told you on Zoom. I have a small question about the plot of efficiency of recombination. The first one you showed us.
This one?
No, the first one.
This one?
Yes.
Yes.
You said that when we have low temperatures and high temperatures, the recombination is hard to get.
Yeah.
But here, the lowest temperature we have where you have the best.
Yeah, that's right. But they didn't. It's still, you have to very low temperature.
Okay.
If you really want to freeze H, you have to be at very low temperature.
Okay.
So now we are roughly around that. You can have fluctuation a little bit. So it's still efficient.
Okay. So that's the minimum temperature.
Yeah. It's for H is very mobile, so you don't really see. But when you go to if your atoms, it's very clear. If it's too cold, they don't move.
Okay. Cool.
Well, the dust that we find in the universe, what makes it warm? You said that right now it's around 10 Kelvin, while
of course, you have the CMB, but they are above the CMB.
Yeah.
I think it's a radiation field. The star formation is a radiation field.
Okay.
But this is a very average temperature of the grain. You may have grain, you may have dust with a much lower temperature. But that's for sure if the dust grain are in equilibrium with your photon.
Mm.
So if you want to form star at redshift 6 or 8, something like here, you need to form H2 at this temperature. You can have all the dark matter agglomeration you can want, all the bionic matter doesn't work.
But higher redshifts from the plot from star formation versus redshift, it's higher redshift, the star formation is lowest. So where would the temperature come from?
Yeah, I understand the question. This, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay.
No. I don't know, because you may think you have a plateau, right?
Yeah.
No, of course it's dark matter, but But my concern is more here, actually. Why you don't have
Yeah, but that was also my question. As higher redshifts, and you say you need more time to form it as higher
temperature. So I'm not saying this is coming from HP. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you should consider H2, but by slow down your star formation.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? Here or Zoom?
So do we.
Okay.
So the first ways of forming H2? Would be the main drivers of formation of clusters, of crystals.
If you really want to form the, well, this one is more efficient. There's a pop free star, they are components. I mean, you can cool down your ISM with atomic oxygen line, 63 micron, number one. But if you want to cool with H2, you have to go through this one.
The previous plot on the star forming so the function of plane didn't an effect of the expansion that we have this shape and it's not
this
because it's per megaparsec cubic megaparsec.
Yeah.
But with the expansion, you lower the density, and so that might explain this behavior.
I mean, this is already explained without chemistry. Okay.
No, go through the method. You cannot see you change the formation and then you say that. Mm-hmm. So achieve after 3 minutes clusters, you see the change formation by removing the dust from the galaxy. That's also considered.
My question is the peak here is because formation of H2 to get efficient.
Is that great, or is I'm not saying this is coming from H2.
Okay.
No, I'm. I think it's funny. So I think it's funny. But if you take purely chemical consideration, you get the maximum of efficiency where the magnetic inside is. This work is biased actually because they took the density of grain and they use the Madodikinson law to give the density of grain. So obviously you pick here.
Okay.
But it's still interesting that you can shift.
On your experiment that you did, you said you were using one type of one molecule for the dust. How did you choose that? Is it something that you easily find in the empty region of the
nucleus? You have catalogs of pH. So you buy the pH you want, volume you want, 1 kilogram if you want. That's not the problem. The problem is to put in the gas phase. So you have a small oven with a filament and you warm up to reasonable temperature. Then you can vaporize your pH. So to do that, you cannot do it with a lot of pH. So you can do it with coronin because it's small. So you have to understand how it's done. So you have a small oven, you vaporize, and then it's condensing on the surface. That's why you need to have it in a cast phase. And also, so this is one monomer. If you stack the monomer randomly, you can create a lot of defects. And the idea is to create defects to have a chemisorption. So we optimize conjugation, all the surface defect and the chemisorption. Nice. But you could do that just by crushing pH. But this is technical. What is important here is that it's very scalable.
You can create all the defects just from stacking them one over the other?
Yeah, stacking randomly.
Okay.
What are the beams for? You have two beams of light, of the red light.
Yeah, these are beam of photons.
No, I mean on the right bar.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is not used. It's a Fourier transform infrared spectrometer. So it's a spectrometer. So you have light. You reflect light on the surface, and here is your detector. And then you can take infrared spectra of the surface. It's not used in the study, but it's a routine apparatus to have the spectrum of what you get. But for H2, it's useless because.
You said the experiment is kind of, you can't use H atoms because of H2 from the atmosphere, but can't it be done just in the void, this kind of experiment?
No, yeah, this is in vacuum. This is 10 to the minus 10 to the minus 1 box. But still, you have outgassing. Even if you have a metal, it's outgassing like the sponge. So, and the major pollutant is H2. And then water, and you can do what you want. You have a residual H2 in the atmosphere, even in high vacuum. So if you take deuterium, you are safe. Tritium, you're not safe. Deuterium.
One last question, if it's possible. So you did all of this to understand how can you get to H2. And first, you started by saying we don't know which started the star formation or the...
Yeah, exactly.
Did you answer that question?
Not yet.
Okay.
Actually, I had a talk with Kenny Cut himself on this. And he told me it's a good question, but we don't know. So. No, you understand the thing. I mean, if you have star, you have dust, and then you form H2. And you have H2, you form star. So, second shipment.
That would be nice as a talk. These are here too.
Yeah, I guess we're not used to this kind of talks.
Okay. Sorry for the email notifications. Okay. Does anyone else have a question? Kind of overwhelmed you with questions. You're late.
You're late.
Okay. Well, let's thank Patrice again. Thank you. Thank you very much.